If you're not comfortable at any time sitting on the floor, we have chairs back there and the window seats. Please make yourself at home. So today we'll be discussing the Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter. And before we do that, we're going to look at one of the Upanishads. Bhagavad Gita is also called Gita Upanishad. There are 108 main Upanishads, which are the philosophical part of the Vedas. And Upanishad actually means to sit up close. Because the Vedas, are you familiar with the Vedas? They're the books of knowledge of India. They include things like Ayurveda, which is the science of how to live longer and healthier. Ayurveda's pretty popular nowadays. Santa Cruz, you'll see it a lot. There's different kinds of medicines that are natural, how to naturally balance the life airs of the body. Is your first time here?
Second time. I came here on Sunday, and I just moved here from Michigan.
Welcome from Michigan. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming. What's your name?
Hiran.
Hiran. Uh-huh. Nice to see you, Hiran. Hare Krishna. There's Ayurveda, and there's also sections of the Vedas which tell how to do architecture. It's kind of like feng shui, called Vastu Shastra, in order to build and live in a certain way that the energies are balanced in one's life. There's also part of the Vedas which is dedicated to military science. Vedas are a huge project because they address all of human society in a way to give them knowledge to live in a practical way. And then there's a special human need, which is the need to inquire about the Supreme, the need to inquire about, you know, what's the purpose of my life. And in fact, in the consolidated section of all of the Vedas, called the Vedanta, there's an aphorism which says, Atato Brahma Jignasa, which means, now that you've come to the human form of life, it's time to inquire. Inquire about what? Brahman. Brahman means the greatest. What's beyond all the relative world? And who is the source of my very existence? How did I get here? Where am I going? According to the Vedas, in the human form of life, we're especially qualified to inquire about this and understand these topics. So Upanishad, the Upanishadic section of the Vedas, is the section at which time one becomes very interested in this. Because a lot, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvataha. Out of many thousands among the population, only a few are interested in self-realization. And out of those few who inquire actually about self-realization, hardly a handful of them attain some kind of perfection. This is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's a rare thing, actually. Mostly people are interested in economic development, how to live a happy life in this life, and the subject of death is taboo. Why do I have to die? Let's not talk about it. It's way off in the distance somewhere, right? But for those who want to solve the problems of life and actually ask these important questions, who am I and why do I have to die, etc., the Upanishads come in. So Upanishad means you sit up close to a teacher. Now you want to hear, actually. So you move up close and you say, okay, what is it? I want to ask. I want to find out who I am, where I'm going, etc. So out of the 108 main Upanishads, this book called Sri Ishupanishad. Isho means the controller. It's another name for God, which means the one who controls everything. Like, I'm not the controller, even of my own body, because I eat food all the time, and I have no idea how it's digested. It just is. I'll eat some spinach, and it gets distributed to different parts of my body, and I get health and nutrition from it, but I have very little to do with the process. I also have nothing to do with the process of growing it. The powerful sun is giving energy to all the vegetables and all living creatures, but I can't control the sun when it rises, when it sets. So I'm not the controller, but Isha is the controller. So this book is about the supreme controller, Sri Ishapanishad. So this particular book we read as a preamble to reading the Bhagavad Gita. And to make it more convenient so we can hear the verses, there's 19 verses in all in this book. Each one of them is called a mantra. And the first one is called the invocation, and there's 18 more verses, which are mantras. And each one of the mantras are meant to help us enter more deeply within the subject matter of Isha, or the Supreme Controller. So, to make it easy, we've consolidated all of the verses in this blue book, this binder that's on your book stand, and it's all located on this bubblegum colored tab, if you want to turn to that. And we read the Sanskrit all the way through together. And for those of you who may not have chanted Sanskrit before, don't worry. You can either chant it or just listen, because the vibration of the Sanskrit and a mantra is purifying whether you sing it or whether you just listen to it. In the word mantra, man means mind, and tra comes from the word triyate, which means to deliver. So the mind is implicated in material life, which means thinking about the past, thinking about the future, and very rarely ever in the present. So the mantra can deliver the mind from its wanderings back and forth. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we discuss the Bhagavad Gita, because the first goal of yoga, according to Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras, is to control the mind. So the mind is the center of all senses. So we'll chant these mantras all the way through, listening to the sound vibration, and then we'll hear the English translations. Is everybody ready? In your blue book, you'll find it more easily available because it's consolidated under that pink tab in the back. Did any of those verses strike you in any way? Like that you saw one that sounded like interesting, or that you wondered what it meant? Okay. Oh, the quota. Yeah. Okay. Let's look into that one a little bit. That'll be the verse number one, mantra number one. Yeah. So now I'll read a little bit of the purport, and we can discuss a little bit. So first of all, this word Tyaktena in the verse itself. Tena tyaktena means to set aside quota. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Purport. Vedic knowledge is infallible because it comes down through the perfect disciplic succession of spiritual masters, beginning with the Lord himself. Since he spoke the first word of Vedic knowledge, the source of this knowledge is transcendental. The words spoken by the Lord are called apurusheya, which indicates that they are not delivered by any mundane person. A living being who lives in the mundane world has four defects. One, he is certain to commit mistakes. Two, he is subject to illusion. Three, he has a propensity to cheat others. And four, his senses are imperfect. No one with these four imperfections can deliver perfect knowledge. The Vedas are not produced by such an imperfect creature. Vedic knowledge was originally imparted by the Lord into the heart of Brahma, the first created living being, and Brahma in his turn disseminated this knowledge to his sons and disciples who have handed it down through history. Since the Lord is Purnam, all perfect, there is no possibility of his being subjected to the laws of material nature, which he controls. However, both the living entities and inanimate objects are controlled by the laws of nature and ultimately by the Lord's potency. This Ishopanishad is part of the Yajurveda, and consequently it contains information concerning the proprietorship of all things existing within the universe. The Lord's proprietorship over everything within the universe is confirmed in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 7:4-5, where para and apara prakriti are discussed. The elements of nature, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, all belong to the Lord's inferior material energy, apara prakriti, whereas the living being, the organic energy, is his superior energy, para prakriti. Both of these prakritis, or energies, are emanations from the Lord. And ultimately, he is the controller of everything that exists. There is nothing in the universe that does not belong to either the para or the apara prakriti. Therefore, everything is the property of the Supreme Being. Because the Supreme Being, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, is the complete person, he has complete and perfect intelligence to adjust everything by means of his different potencies. The Supreme Being is often compared to a fire, and everything organic and inorganic is compared to the heat and light of that fire. Just as fire distributes energy in the form of heat and light, the Lord displays his energy in different ways. He thus remains the ultimate controller, sustainer and dictator of everything. He is the possessor of all potencies, the knower of everything, and the benefactor of everyone. He is full of inconceivable opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. One should therefore be intelligent enough to know that except for the Lord, no one is a proprietor of anything. One should accept only those things that are set aside by the Lord as his quota. The cow, for instance, gives milk, but she does not drink that milk. She eats grass and straw, and her milk is designated as food for human beings. Such is the arrangement of the Lord. Thus we should be satisfied with those things he has kindly set aside for us, and we should always consider to whom those things we possess actually belong. Take, for example, our dwelling, which is made of earth, wood, stone, iron, cement, and so many other material things. If we think in terms of Sri Ishopanishad, we must know that we cannot produce any of these building materials ourselves. We can simply bring them together and transform them into different shapes by our labor. A laborer cannot claim to be a proprietor of a thing just because he has worked hard to manufacture it. In modern society, there is always a great quarrel between the laborers and the capitalists. This quarrel has taken international shape, and the world is in danger. Men face one another in enmity and snarl just like cats and dogs. Sri Ishopanishad cannot give advice to the cats and dogs, but it can deliver the message of Godhead to man through the bona fide acharyas, holy teachers. The human race should take the Vedic wisdom of Sri Ishopanishad and not quarrel over material possessions. One must be satisfied with whatever privileges are given to him by the mercy of the Lord. There can be no peace if the communists or capitalists or any other party claims proprietorship over the resources of nature, which are entirely the property of the Lord. The capitalists cannot curb the communists simply by political maneuvering, nor can the communists defeat the capitalists simply by fighting for stolen bread. If they do not recognize the proprietorship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the property they claim to be theirs is stolen. Consequently, they will be liable to punishment by the laws of nature. Nuclear bombs are in the hands of both communists and capitalists. And if both do not recognize the proprietorship of the Supreme Lord, it is certain that these bombs will ultimately ruin both parties. Thus, in order to save ourselves and bring peace to the world, both parties must follow the instructions of Sri Ishopanishad. Human beings are not meant to quarrel like cats and dogs. They must be intelligent enough to realize the importance and aim of human life. The Vedic literature is meant for humanity and not for cats and dogs. Cats and dogs can kill other animals for food without incurring sin, but if a man kills an animal for the satisfaction of his uncontrolled taste buds, he is responsible for breaking the laws of nature. Consequently, he must be punished. A standard of life for human beings cannot be applied to animals. The tiger does not eat rice and wheat or drink cow's milk, but because he has been given food in the shape of animal flesh. Among the many animals and birds, some are vegetarian and others are carnivorous, but none of them transgress the laws of nature, which have been ordained by the will of the Lord. Animals, birds, reptiles, and other Lower life forms strictly adhere to the laws of nature. Therefore, there is no question of sin for them, nor are the Vedic instructions meant for them. Human life alone is a life of responsibility. It is wrong, however, to think that simply by becoming a vegetarian, one can avoid transgressing the laws of nature. Vegetables also have life. And while it is nature's law that one living being is meant to feed it on another, for human beings, the point is to recognize the Supreme Lord. Thus, one should not be proud of being a strict vegetarian. Animals do not have developed consciousness by which to recognize the Lord. But a human being is sufficiently intelligent to take lessons from the Vedic literature and thereby know how the laws of nature are working and derive profit out of such knowledge. If a man neglects the instructions of the Vedic literature, his life becomes very risky. A human being is therefore required to recognize the authority of the Supreme Lord and become his devotee. He must offer everything for the Lord's service and partake only of the remnants of food offered to the Lord. This will enable him to discharge his duty properly. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.26, the Lord directly states that he accepts vegetarian food from the hands of a pure devotee. Therefore, a human being should not only become a strict vegetarian, but should also become a devotee of the Lord, offer the Lord all his food, and then partake of such prasadam, or mercy of God. Only those who act in this way can properly discharge the duties of human life. Those who do not offer their food to the Lord eat nothing but sin and subject themselves to various types of distress, which are the results of sin. Bhagavad Gita 3.13. The root of sin is deliberate disobedience of the laws of nature through disregarding the proprietorship of the Lord. Disobeying the laws of nature or the order of the Lord brings ruin to a human being. Conversely, one who is sober, who knows the laws of nature, and who is not influenced by unnecessary attachment or aversion, is sure to be recognized by the Lord and thus become eligible to go back to Godhead, back to the eternal home. So there's a lot there, huh? Okay. Again, I want to bring your attention to the chairs back there, because sometimes sitting on the floor, you know, whenever you get tired, please make yourself. Any questions from that, first of all? Yeah. Could you pass him the microphone, please?
So here we just read one statement. Those who do not offer their food to the Lord eat nothing but sin, right? So usually, currently in this kind of time, the life is so busy, right? So people don't get time to eat food. For example, myself, every time I have to eat lunch outside because I don't get time to make food, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, I usually go to Subway or any other restaurants. So according to Isopanishada, I am eating sin only, right? In that case.
Well, this quotation is from the Bhagavad Gita, right? He refers to the Bhagavad Gita 3.13, right? So the idea is, you're asking a practical question. First, there's a philosophical question about this idea that of eating sin. First, let's look at it from the Bhagavad Gita, just so we cover the general philosophical part. And that's in this third chapter of Bhagavad Gita called Karma Yoga. Krishna makes this statement on page 158. This is text 12 and 13 we'll look at. Ishtan bhoghan hivo deva dasyante yagdabhavitaha tardatan aparat yaibyo yo punkte stena eva saha. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. And the next verse, on bottom of one page 59, yajna shishtashina shanto muchante sarvakilbishai punjate tetakam papa ye pachantyat tikarman. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. So the idea, this is from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita about eating food which is offered first for sacrifice, which means that really what it boils down to, it's not ritualistic, but it's a matter of common gratitude. These two verses talk about how actually We're being supplied with many necessities of life from the very time we're born, actually. Our body is a gift. It's a gift of nature. And the air we breathe, I take it for granted. I breathe all the time. I'm breathing in and out. But when you're choking and you can't get any air, then you really start to think how valuable air is, right? So water, you know, you can't live without water for very long. And having good, clean water, I mean, it's actually going to become one of the huge issues on the planet, and it already is, about water resources. It is in California already. It has been for many, many years. Who gets the water? A lot of it's been shipped down to Southern California, and there's, you know, water's a big deal. It's a huge resource. You can't go on without it. In India now, there's fights over the water rights because big companies like PepsiCo and Coca-Cola are buying up the water from villages and pumping it out and putting it into bottles and reselling it to everyone now that bottled water is popular in India. Anyway, it's a huge issue, water. But where does it come from? Where does water come from? We have water, air, light, and all these things, these natural necessities. Well, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, the statement is, Devarshi Bhutapnan Rinam Pitrinam Nakinkara Nayam Rinicharajan, that along with our birth, we become dhrini, which means debtors. We already owe a lot of people because we're being supplied a lot of necessities. And a lot of people are helping us just to live. Our mother, our father, there are many kinds of animals, like cows mentioned there, that give us milk. Milk products are in a lot of things. Air, light, these all come from somewhere. And someone might say, no, they're not, they're just free. So it's kind of like if you live in an apartment or a house and you say, you know, the air, the light, and the water, it's just free, right? Well, you might think that until the bill comes at the end of the month, and then you look and see, actually, you're being charged for these things. You have to pay for it. If you don't pay, what happens? They definitely cut it off. We had that happen a couple times at our when we stayed on Union Street. We'd been in the middle of the class, and the light goes out. Somebody didn't pay the bill. You know, oh, I forgot to pay the bill. And then the light goes out. So what's being pointed out here in the Bhagavad Gita is that these necessities of life are not free, actually. We're being provided many things, and there's a price to pay for these. We're rini, we're debtors. And so food, similarly, it's being provided to us by the grace of the Supreme, fruits and vegetables and things. Yes, Novinsky's. Could you please pass him the microphone?
Somebody might say, well, I paid for my food, you know. I paid for my lunch, or I went to the shop and I handed some money over. So I'm not a debtor. I'm paying my dues.
Yeah, that definitely helps. But at the same time, now the next point is this idea of offering it to the Supreme. So it's a matter of recognizing where it comes from, what is an offering. I'm offering it back out of some kind of gratitude. This is the beginning of the God-conscious life, of this, which is indicated in this Sri Ishapanishad, Ishavasya spirit. So three kinds of people. Someone sees, you're standing in line at Safeway, okay, Whole Foods, and I didn't want to take you to Safeway. So you're standing in line at Whole Foods, and then you see the man in front of you drop a $100 bill. Yeah, it's obvious. In fact, all of you do. You know, there's like three people behind him and he drops a $100 bill. So there's a few things that you can do, right? Like, what could you do? One person picks it up, puts it in his pocket. What's he? A thief. I mean, you saw where it came from, a $100 bill, right? Someone else, they could just leave it there. And someone else, they could tap the guy on the shoulder and say, hey, you dropped a $100 bill. And give it back to him, right? So which is the most practical and honest? Is returning it. Give it back. So this idea that we understand where things are coming from puts us in the proper orientation to offer things. If I think that everything in the universe is free and I just take it, it's like if I come to your house and I just start helping myself with no recognition at all, what kind of a guest am I? It's obnoxious, it's rude, right? And so similarly, there are all these necessities being provided, and if we give recognition and offer where the offer them back to the Lord where they've come from, then this is civilized life. It's the beginning of spiritual life, actually. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami tells Maharaj Parikshit that there is a way in which to see the universe as personal, because we can understand and see that all aspects of the universe are actually, if you look and you look at it, you can see it as the body of the Lord, actually. Sometimes kids do this. They'll look and they'll see the big universe, and they'll see it as personal. And similarly, Shukadev Goswami describes it, that you can see it like that, that the large mountains are the sacks of his bones, and the clouds floating in the air are the hairs on his head, or the trees are the hairs on his body, the rivers are his veins, things like this. This description of the universal form of the Lord. And in that, then one might see that there are trees providing fruit and waters providing river, rivers providing water. And one might begin to feel that, oh, this is, you know, someone thought of this. There's some design behind this. Like a cow walks around, eats grass all day and provides milk. Who thought of that one? I mean, even if you paid a scientist $1 billion or a group of scientists and asked to produce a cow, through research, could you do it? Could you? One cow? Or a machine that you put in hay and, you know, and flowers on one side, and out the other side comes milk? Or one pear? So these things are actually miraculous gifts that are being given to us, and to offer them back with some sort of feeling, this is called bhakti, that this is being provided to me by the Lord and I'm offering it back. So that's the philosophical side. And the practical side, today in today's world, where we don't live out in the forest and you don't pick a fruit from the tree or get the water from the river, we become really detached and dislocated from seeing the universal form of the Lord, don't we? Because mostly in what we see nowadays in stores is not food, but it's called food-like substances. They're food-like substances with lots of different ingredients in them. They've been processed and put in packages and all kinds of things. When we get water, you just turn on the tap and the water comes out. And even people who eat meat don't really have a real consciousness of where it's coming from. I have relatives that we've talked to about vegetarianism. I was just telling someone the other night that years ago on television there was some expose about the slaughtering process that takes place for animals. And I remember some friends and relatives had seen that and become avowed vegetarians just afterwards, saying that, I didn't know where the meat came from. Of course, they gave it up after some time also. But, you know, even meat that comes in a package, people don't think this came from an animal. There's a process it went through. So we become sort of detached from the whole process. So Krishna consciousness means to link back up to that consciousness wherever you are in all circumstances. So you may have a job in Silicon Valley, obviously you do, and sometimes you go out with everyone for lunch and have a lunch at another place. So in those circumstances, you also do the best you can to connect your consciousness to where it's come from and make an offering of it to the Lord. And those are practical circumstances. But the main important thing is the consciousness. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yat koroshi yad ashnasi yat johasi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi kontiyat tat kudushva manarpanam. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, do as a sacrifice for me. And if you do that, then everything becomes spiritualized. So you have to do the best you can in all the circumstances that you're in. And it'll get better. There are other practical things you can do, like take something with you. You know, a lot of people take a lunch with them. You know, if you really want, diet's an important thing, and if you want to be really careful about what you eat, like whenever I fly, I always bring prasadam with me on the plane. Prasadam means, you know, food that was cooked in certain consciousness, in loving consciousness, offered to God first, you know. And I bring it with me, and you know, what do they serve on the plane? On United Airlines, they have the snack pack, the quick pick. you fly, right? They have all these, like, boxed up things they throw at people for $7. And, you know, when I pull out the brashana, people are looking over like, what'd you get? You know? you can bring these nice things with you, and your life's sublime. Just plan ahead a little bit. There's lots of leftover prashadam here. Usually, you can get a tiffin and bring it with you.
And maybe you can recite Mahamantra for 3 times, and probably it becomes spiritual.
1 time, 3 times, but do it with full love and intensity when you offer. Jadu Thakur, when he was given mangoes by Kalidas, he offered them in his mind to Lord Vishnu. The offering is there. You were going to say? You had a question too?
Yes.
Yeah, one too.
Now you mentioned these things, it's more serious for me, that how do we make the offer for the air I breathe and the sun I get and the water, the sources and all the things I get? I can pay for the food and offer, but how do I do that for the air I breathe and the water and the sun and all that things?
Well, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Machitta magata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantashchamam nityam tushanti cha ramanti cha. So he describes how to use, how the devotees are always dedicating all their life. Machitta means the consciousness. You have a consciousness. This is the greatest gift because you're getting intelligence. You can see. You can contemplate. And your chitta, your consciousness, machitta. He says machitta magata prana, and the life air that you're breathing. That thing, he said, the devotees dedicate to me. In other words, they use their consciousness thinking how to serve Krishna, how to serve God. And they use their life air. They're talking about Krishna. They're going places. They're breathing air for the purpose of going places. Your feet, you walk, your legs. Human legs are meant for walking to places to do good for others. For doing good for others. If you're doing that, then you're actually using them for the right purpose. So, machita magata prana podayanta parasparam. So, katayantashchamam nityam. Always they're talking about Krishna. They're figuring out ways to tell other people about Krishna. This is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So that's how you use your breath. When you see Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was the founder of our movement. And he wrote these books, presented these books. And he passed away in 1977. He was very dedicated to putting this knowledge together in this form so that others could read it. And before he passed away, there was a couple of months where he stopped eating very much, and he was in a very weakened state. But still, he was translating the books. They held a little dictaphone in front of his mouth even when he was lying on his back, and he was still speaking. So life air, you're speaking something, that's you're using the air, so you should speak about Krishna. Something beneficial that will help others. Then you're performing a sacrifice. In the 4th chapter of the Gita, there's description of sacrifices. Sacrificing for the sake of a higher cause. That's what the 4th chapter goes into. Nayam lokosti jagnyasya kuto na kuru satamaha. Krishna asks the question, without this kind of sacrifice, how can you have happiness in this life, what to speak of the next? So, if you perform sacrifice throughout the day, and your life is arranged in that way, you'll utilize everything. Your hands, your feet, your ears, your eyes, your nose. That's the idea of yoga. Real yoga means to have all the mind senses controlled by engaging them in Krishna service. Thinking in that way. Okay? Krishna prana.
As we were reading these verses in Bhagavad Gita about offering anything you get to the Lord, and it came to me this question. I have background in Christianity, and every time, you know, we sit down to eat, we always made a prayer and gratitude. But somehow that's quite different from making an offering. I wondered if you'd speak on that for a minute.
Well, not entirely different. In the process of making an offering in Krishna consciousness, we actually, out of love, consider that Krishna was personally taking the offering. And there's a verse in the Sri Upanishad which says, the Lord is far away, but is very near as well. Tad ejiti, tad naijiti, tad dure, tad vantike. Sometimes people will say, in fact, I remember someone specifically was saying that, I can understand that you're interested in Krishna consciousness, you're interested in God and everything like that, but, you know, he's really far away. He's like, you know how far away the sun is? Yeah. He's even beyond that. So, like, you know, that's really far away, so there's a lot of practical things to take care of in this world. Why do you care so much about God? Because he's so far away. But then his Upanishad says, but then he's very close, they're very near as well. And Srila Prabhupada enunciates how he can, by his mystical power, he can reach out and accept something wherever we are. That's his prerogative. And he's also very close because he's within our heart. Hare Krishna. So if we offer Krishna something in a personal way, out of love and devotion, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, then we're considering that he's actually taking it. And then, you know, what's left is the prasadam. And then, of course, saying grace, you know, around the table, that's something out of gratitude. It is a little different, now that you mention it, because it's more, you know, saying thank you for this food that's been given. When devotees offer things, they consider very carefully what's favorable to be offered, or what's acceptable to be that Krishna will accept. Patram pushpam palam toyam. They don't offer him unofferable things out of love. You know, if I know you don't like something, and I go out of my way to not give you those things, you'll notice it, right? Like when I went to Toronto recently, the devotees wrote me and asked me if I had any dietary restrictions, and I said I only eat prasadam. But then I thought, but I do like avocados. So I don't know why, but I wrote it in there. And when I got to Toronto, there was avocados everywhere. And I was carrying home a sack of avocados on the plane through California customs even. And, you know, there's avocados everywhere. And it was out of love. You know, they wanted to give me something that I liked. So they gave me avocados, and I really appreciated it. And so Krishna's like that too. You know, he asks for certain things that we offer out of love and devotion. There's a very personal element to that, to offering something, offering things to God. It really makes a strong connection. That's why we're sometimes, you know, the Hare Krishna movement, it's called a kitchen religion, as we put so much into cooking and feeding others and like that. And there's a lot that goes into the consciousness of cooking that's very personal. You know, when you go home, you visit, say you've been on the road for many months, and you come home to your family, your beloved family, and you know, when you're on the road and you're eating, every place you go, you look and say, what's in this, you know? Who cooked it? Where did it come from? You have to question, right? But when you come home, they just put something in front of you and say, eat, and you just eat it. Because you know, out of love, you know, they care for me, they put the right things in. You don't ask, you know, hey, what's in this? I don't ask Nirkula, what'd you put in this? So similarly, you know, when we have that consciousness of knowing what Krishna wants and we're offering it out of love and devotion, there's a very close connection to God when we're cooking in that way, to Krishna. So it's a very personal kind of thing, cooking. It is a step beyond, you know, just saying thank you for what we're about to take. But in any case, whatever ritual we do to say grace, to say thank you or something like that, the main thing is the consciousness. Because in any process, we can get into the mode of just saying it without actually thinking about it. And so to think about it and actually feel gratitude is very important in the process. Ishavasham. Anything, any other questions or things that came up about this? Okay.
So I had this conversation with someone the other day regarding like taking food in a restaurant and you know, the idea that you're taking on someone else's karma if you're eating food that is prepared by someone else that maybe has prepared with a different consciousness. And that we could go on about that forever. But what came to my mind is that, you know, that we talk a lot about preparing food, and that the remnants of the food that's offered is then prasadam if it's done with sincerity. But is that not extended? This is kind of like what Sunny was saying. Is that not extended to everything we use all day long? How do we offer everything we use all day long? And I guess you've already answered that question. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm thinking about it. The answer's already there.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, we should offer everything. And by being, it's consciousness. It's connected by consciousness. If we remember, and as these verses, like the second to the last verse in this book, Sri Shapanishad, Vayur Anilam Amritam Atidam Bashmantam Shariram, he's saying, let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. My Lord, you know, he's thinking about these things. If we're actually conscious and we remember, you know, when we're breathing. Some yoga processes, they really concentrate on the breath. And, you know, the in and outgoing breath, and become very aware, you know, that it's sustaining life. It's a matter of consciousness. And if you connect your life to Krishna, then you're conscious of that. You're offering it to him. Just a word about eating in restaurants and such. Sometimes I've called it insult to injury, because if you're eating food which is contaminated by bad consciousness, then that's the injury to your own consciousness and maybe even body. And then when you have to pay for it, that's the insult that goes with it. So I like to call eating in restaurants insult to injury. Adding insult to injury. It's an old phrase you probably heard before. But there are practical matters. Sometimes there are situations that, you know, where you might have to sustain yourself when your business person is traveling or in a certain situation. So you have to do the best you can while you're in that situation. Okay. Anything else about Ishavasham Idam Sarvam? Then let's look at the Bhagavad Gita.